Broadcasting live from Studio 1A in Brooklyn, New York. This is Empire State Reptiles Live, specializing in connecting breeders and fans worldwide. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the internet, and welcome to another episode of Empire State Reptiles Live. My name is Chris, and I am so glad to be back here as your host. I know it's been a little while, 2 weeks, and that's basically almost become the trend over here at ESR Live, but I promise I will definitely be breaking that trend from now on. A lot of personal issues and things have come up. And I really do sincerely apologize for taking so long with producing these shows and getting them out to you guys. So we're going to jump into the show tonight. Tonight we have a very special guest on the show. His name is Peter Clausen, owner of Bugs in Cyberspace. And he owns so many other different type of bug forms and all other different types of businesses. So I want him to get on the show and explain it a little bit more in depth for us so we can just have a lot of fun. So let's welcome him on the show.
Hello.
Good evening, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing really great. Happy Earth Day to you and all the listeners.
Yeah, I totally forgot. Yeah, it is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day to you too. So would you mind starting to tell us a little bit about what you do and what you're working with over there? I know it's totally different than reptiles, but we know that you own the mantisform.net, the beetleform.net, and then the roachform.com. So how did you get into all this?
Got it. Just like every other kid, I think, I'm out in my backyard and it's a sunny day and I'm really small. There's colorful flowers all around and, things are moving out there and I just have a natural curiosity about it. And my parents just kind of gave me free rein to go out and, just play with things and collect them. So that's what I did. And, my mother never slapped my hand away when I was reaching for something.
Okay.
I didn't have that fear instilled in me at an early age, like I think a lot of kids in America do.
Of course.
And they supported me through buying field guides. And this was long before, Bug Guide and other online identification resources. So I just lived my life between those pages. And in my early childhood, just out in the backyard, collecting things and always looking for something new. So I started out with a dead insect collection and, and then later, pet stores in my area here up in the Pacific Northwest. When I was in my early 20s, they started selling some exotic stick insects and that's sort of when I became a pet bug hobbyist. And, the pet bug hobby online was just becoming popular at that time too. And I threw up a little website about 20 years ago now that became Bugs in Cyberspace and just started trading with people, not just in this country, but at that time, not really following the rules too well, but trading things internationally. And I amassed this huge collection of stick insects. At one time, I had over 100 species. And it's funny because a lot of people probably don't even know that about me, even if they've known me for the last 10 years, because I dropped that part of the hobby about 10 years ago and started branching off into other pet bug groups. And then somewhere along the way, I went from trading things to selling things. It's just sort of a natural evolution, I think.
Of course.
And
definitely.
Yeah. So now the store's been up for many years now, and you mentioned the three forums, and then the other fairly significant thing that I do is I have a dead insects business, and so I sell dead stock material, and that was sort of an evolution out of having a lot of pet bugs that would end up dying, and, you know, buying an additional freezer for the garage and storing specimens in there. And, you know, I had all of these dead bugs, and then I need something to do with them. And
yeah,
there's a huge dead insect hobby, of course, too. So I have a foot in both worlds. You know, a lot of my customers between those two sites, you know, they have a foot only in one of those worlds. They're a pet bug hobbyist, but not a dead bug hobbyist.
Okay.
That's about it.
Yeah. So guys, I want to apologize that, I actually just corrected a mistake that I made. Our Shure microphone was not plugged up into the console, that exchanges the XLR cable to the USB cable. So I apologize for that. So you guys were hearing the nasty microphone from the internal microphone from the Mac computer. I'm so sorry for that. It was probably crappy audio, but we're hooked up with the microphone now, so you should be hearing my voice a lot better now. So we're going to go to our first caller of the night. It's an 801 caller. They've been waiting patiently for the last 10 minutes. They called in before the show even started, so I hope you have a lot to say. So good evening, 801. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Josh, and I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Ah, Salt Lake City. Nice place up there.
Hi, Josh.
So, hi, Josh. What is your question? Yeah, what's your question?
I have a question for rhino beetles. I've noticed that a lot of them don't live too long. Is that just in majority or what?
First of all, I assume by not live very long, you're referring to the adult portion of the lifespan. You know, like butterflies, the adult is the shortest part of the entire lifespan, except the egg, I guess.
Right.
And so, yeah, the larvae in a lot of rhino beetles, and, you know, there are people who raise exotics here in the country, but I only sell native rhino beetle species. And usually that means Dynastes titius or Dynastes grantii. There's a few other rhinos that we sell as well. And, you know, probably a few others besides that make it around the hobby. It's a little tricky to answer that question too, because sometimes you'll purchase a wild caught specimen and you really have no idea how old that specimen is at the time of collection or the time of sale. So if you're talking about one of the dynasties, one of the US dynasties, you know, might get 5 months out of it if it's captive bred, maybe a little bit longer if you give it an overwintering phase in the case of the Eastern species, which tends to overwinter anyway. But if it's wild caught, you know, you're looking at 0 to probably 3 months on average.
All right. Awesome, dude. Thanks. My brother loves rhinos, and that's why I've been asking you a lot, Peter. That's why. So.
Yeah. And, well, it's really good to hear from you, Josh. Did you have another question?
Are you going to be getting in more callosoma?
Did you say callosoma, the fiery searcher caterpillar hunters? Hope to. I have two sources for those right now, and I know that they're both eager to collect because that's when they get paid, and I'm eager for them, and the customers are as well. So the sooner the better.
Well, I love the pair that you sent me. I still got them. They're eating on large pre-killed crickets, and wanted to thank you for that, man.
Yeah. That's great. I love to hear it when people are having fun with their bugs.
All right.
Definitely.
Well,
for anybody that doesn't know, that's a big, it's a big green beetle, a metallic green. They've been on my Instagram page and on my Facebook page. I featured them a lot lately, maybe a little bit too much even. They're beautiful.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You know,
Go
ahead.
Oh, no. Continue. You can continue.
Oh, I was just saying they're a little over an inch long, and they're just this beautiful metallic green. And, you know, they really reflect what's great about the pet bug hobby. You know, anybody who's familiar with a fish tank and how active they are with the fish swimming around, a lot of pet bugs are like that, where there's constant movement in the cage all the time. And these green caterpillar hunter beetles are very active and just really colorful and really pretty. Great species for a pet.
Well, I That's where I kind of switched to beetles, Peter. I was a big tarantula collector, and now I'm planning on breeding a lot of beetles. And hopefully I'd like to give you guys some stock if I'm successful. So.
Yeah, great. Well, good luck with all that, Josh. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, good luck, Josh. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in tonight, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
You too.
All right, Peter. So now that you've jumped into some of the things that you are dealing with, let's talk about the rest of your collection and the rest of the things that you sell. So what are you working with?
It's a very difficult question to answer. we've got hundreds of species coming through here, live and dead. You know, for your radio audience, I imagine that the live stuff is probably more on topic. The sun's coming out again. It's springtime, and that's when bug season starts up here in the U.S. Of course, we sell a lot of captive bred material, things that specialists and just generalists breed here in captivity. I buy a lot of things from other people, but I purchase a lot of material that's wild collected too. I look mainly for unique things. You know, there's a lot of tarantula dealers out there, and importers sell exotic scorpions and centipedes and things like that. I don't really try to compete in that market just because everybody else is doing it. So I try to specialize mainly in things that are not eight-legged. So, you know, centipedes, okay. Millipedes, insects, things like that. So it's really just anything neat that I can get. You know, somebody contacts me and offers me something, and I close the deal and get it out to the customers as quick as I can. All the pet bug categories, you know, mantises, millipedes, centipedes, various arachnids. I like getting whip spiders, also called tailless whip scorpions, vinegaroons. I like getting those. Little Venones, harvestmen, make great pets. They live for a couple years. They look like kind of like a daddy long legs. You know, immature specimens of beetles, beetle larvae, people raise them up. People want adult beetles all the time. Desert beetles are great. So we're working with a lot of stuff here. At any given moment, it's hard to know where to start when discussing, you know, what we have.
Okay, so you brought up several different type of species and specimens that you have. So what tends to be your best seller? What tends to, as soon as you get more in, sell out very quickly?
Well, you know, the tarantula hobby is huge. If you want to talk about pet bugs, just in the broadest sense as a group, I don't know what the exact statistics are, but I think that maybe 85% of the pet bug hobby is tarantulas, and, you know, centipedes and scorpions I kind of throw in with that because those kinds of collectors tend to flock together. And yeah, so, you know, I try to specialize in the other things. One of my personal favorites to recommend to a lot of my customers are, you know, they're not coming in off the forums. They're just coming in off Google. They're first-time pet bug keepers, or they're teachers in classrooms, things like that. And so they don't really have, they haven't kept a reptile, or they haven't kept any kind of unusual pet. You know, they're just dog or cat people, you know, typical Americans. And so I typically like to recommend something that's really easy, something that they can't possibly fail with. And one of my favorite groups to recommend is the desert beetles. They're super easy to care for. They are happy at room temperature. They can go long periods without any kind of attention. You know, you can put a little piece of dog food in there, just, you know, a little dry piece of dog food, and that'll sustain them for a month.
Wow.
And they're very active. They move around in the cage. They're very entertaining for kids in classrooms. So those are very popular because I push them. And you know, for all the reasons I mentioned.
So when talking about like getting into keeping bugs, I know that maybe it could be a leap of faith because a lot of people don't really like bugs. So what are some key points that you like to stick to be able to be successful, let's say, with keeping the desert beetle that you were talking about?
Well, yeah, with the desert beetles in particular, I mean, like I just said, you almost can't fail because they really don't need much from people. They live out in very arid areas. It's very dry, sparse when it comes to food. You know, they are still very active, but they seem to be able to get a lot of mileage out of little bits of food, so they can go on forever moving all over the place. So you really can't fail with them. But you know, if you get into some other kinds of bugs like mantises, the care requirements, they need daily care. They need, you know, maybe two or three times a day you want to be checking on them to see where they're at, because
okay.
if they don't get the care they need, then there could be problems.
Yes, definitely. So would you mind talking a little bit about, since desert beetles tend to be the easiest, would you mind talking a little bit about the care requirements behind keeping them? So what substrate
sure.
should they be
yeah.
on and
yeah, there's,
things like that?
There's lots of other things that are really easy. I think a lot of reptile keepers are familiar with cockroaches, and we can talk about them too. But the desert beetles, it's really simple. You don't even need a lid on the cage because they can't climb tank walls. And
oh, really?
You don't need a lid on the cage because they don't require anything in the way of humidity. They'll get most of the moisture that their bodies need from the foods that they eat. You know, you can supplement them with a little, you know, little nibbles of carrots or apple or pretty much anything that,
okay.
you know, was on your table, you know, leftovers from the plate, a dead cricket from the cricket bin, they'll chew that up. Some people use them as tank cleaners, desert beetles, actually. It's become quite popular lately for people to put some in. The blue death feigning beetles are extremely popular, cohabiting those with desert hairy scorpions. That's really popular. So, but to get back
okay.
to your question, you know, any kind of tank will do. Good to have a little bit of substrate on them, so in the bottom of the tank, so that they can get a little bit of traction as they're moving across the tank floor. Like most things, they don't mind it if they don't really need it, like some pet bugs do. But a little something to hide under if they feel like it. You don't necessarily need a heat lamp up on top of the cage, but you know, it does help to sort of mimic their natural cycle if you have a day-night cycle, you know, like what they experience out in the desert. It also makes it easier to see them. And they
okay.
move a little bit more in the okay. evenings.
All right.
A little bit of sand on the bottom okay. of the tank, you know.
Okay.
Pretty. That's about it for them.
Oh, wow. That seems very easy to care for. They seem definitely very easy to care for. So
yeah, a little bit more difficult than a pet rock, but not much.
Oh yeah, definitely. So when talking about bugs in general, most people see a bug in their homes and immediately they want to go run for the closest hard object that they have or the
right.
newspaper, ball it up and hit it and kill it. So obviously, that must hit you in some type of way. So, how do you feel a little bit about that? How do you feel about that?
It sounds like you've met my neighbors and all of my children's friends' parents. Yeah. Well, just to start off, my personal reaction to seeing a bug in the house is excitement, because
of course
there is literally nothing that I haven't sold a single specimen of. That's come into my house on my dead bug website, for example. You know, so when I see something on my wall, a little yellow sack spider, those are pretty common here in Oregon. You know, I look at it and I say $3. So that's
really?
That's my reaction. That's not the normal reaction. What do I say to people like that?
Mm-hmm.
That's almost like you know, having a conversation with people about religion. You know, people are so fervent in their beliefs, and, you know, and unfortunately their hatred about pet bugs, to the point where it, you know, once you know where a person stands on that, even as, you know, the most ardent bug lover in the world, I'm not going to be able to do much. As a first step, I might try to show them something really pretty, you know, and there's a domino cockroach. I don't know if you've heard of them or not, but it's a very beautiful little black cockroach. That's sort of a beetle mimic, has little white spots.
Okay.
And they're about the size of a nickel or maybe a quarter. And, you know, nobody that looks at it that's not already familiar with it would think it was a cockroach. They would think it's a beetle, like a giant ladybug almost. And so I call that my gateway roach. And that's the cockroach that I show to people when I want them to start opening their minds a little bit, or when I sense beforehand that they might not be a fan of cockroaches. Okay. You know, you can usually tell pretty quickly whether someone's,
of course,
you know, open-minded to the concept of pet bugs or not. So I show them that one, you know, and it's like a butterfly almost, or a ladybug. You know, everybody that sees them, you know, it's when something is so beautiful, it's hard not to like it. It's hard to have negative feelings about it. And so that's an approach that I would typically take, is to, you know, start out with some of the really beautiful things, you know, like a morpho butterfly, maybe in a pinned frame, those metallic blue butterflies, show them something like that. And so, you know, you start to turn their perspective a little bit about what a bug is first, and, you know, maybe graduate them slowly towards, you know, some of the creepier things.
Yeah, of course. So I want to get into our next caller, 602. Good evening. Thank you for calling ESR Live. What is your name and where are you calling from?
My name's Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin? Hello?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay. What is your question?
Ben's calling. That's all. Hello?
I'm having a little bit of a hard time getting reception from you, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm just calling in.
You're just calling in?
Yeah, you're on the air, Kevin. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay, so what is your question, Kevin?
What's the most exotic thing you have, like, kept? Just a curiosity. Like, what's the most exotic insect that you have kept? Because I've kept orchid mantises now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to... I've been in the bug hobby for a few years, and it's kind of like a frontier. I explore new things every day. So
yeah, that's what I love about it. Yeah, in fact, you know, you're touching on a point here that I wanted to make sure that I expressed about the pet bug hobby today. I have a short attention span. You know, I can't keep a dog or a cat or anything like that, because, you know, that's like a long-term pet relationship. One of the things that I love about pet bugs is that they don't last as long as other pets. So, you know, I'm constantly seeing new things, you know. It's like trying different foods. I get bored of the same restaurant all the time. You know, so I want to experience as much in this life as I can, and, you know, no matter how many pet bugs you keep, there's always going to be things that you haven't kept before. And so, you know, your question is a tough one for me about the most exotic bug that I've kept. You know, so I live in Oregon, and, you know, so and, you know, I collect around the country myself. And, you know, even here where I live, you know, I used to live 15 minutes down the road, and the bugs that I would see there are very exotic, believe it or not, because the habitat was slightly different. Very exotic in a way compared to what I see in my backyard here. And, you know, I think Chris talked about this a little bit in his written intro, but you know, in 2000 or 2001, I made my first trip to Arizona, and all of these bugs that I'd been looking at in my field guides as a kid, you know, where they were, I was blacklighting at night with the special light setups that attract bugs, and these green, beautiful green metallic beetles and these giant rhinoceros beetles were landing on my blacklight sheet, and you know, that was an overwhelmingly exotic experience for me, you know, not just the bugs, but just, you know, being somewhere else. But, you know, you're probably talking about exotic as from another country. And there are a lot of species here in the U.S. that are captive bred, but originate from other countries. And, you know, so sort of by definition, all of them are exotic. But when I used to raise stick insects, you know, the Phyllium giganteum, the giant leaf bugs, it's really hard to, you know, for an Oregon boy to beat that in terms of something that's just so different than anything that we have around here. So, you know, orchid mantises are, you know, they hold that spot for mantises for me. But I'd have to say the giant leaf bug. It's a kind of stick insect that looks like a leaf about the size of your hand. They're beautiful.
I've seen pictures of them. They're excellent.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. They're beautiful.
So, all right. In terms of keeping pet insects, like, how much commitment do you have to put into it? Because for me, when I do that for even, like, a whole rack of them, it doesn't really take that long.
No, yeah, that's one of the beauties of pet bugs too. And you're raising another point that I wanted to make sure that I made, that, you know, one of the other beauties about the hobby of pet insect keeping is that you can keep these small pets in very small cages, and you know, they are otherwise content in these small cages. They take up very little space in your home, and like you said, you can have, you know, a single rack or a set of shelves with hundreds of different containers on it, each with a different thing. You know, you don't need to watch Animal Planet anymore. You don't need to watch any of the nature shows on TV because it's right there at your fingertips all the time. You know, you grab a cricket from the cricket bin and you throw it in with a tarantula and it's showtime, you know, every day. So that's, It just like you're saying, it really doesn't take that much time because pet bugs, a lot of them need so much or so very little attention. So yeah, I can't get enough of it.
Kevin, besides the praying mantis that you said you have now, what are you keeping or what are you planning on keeping?
So what I was planning on keeping, carnivorous katydids. Like, there's a species of Texas katydid from Texas in Arizona, and it has red eyes, and it's very large, very carnivorous, and it preys on even lizards.
I've had those. I've sold them a few times through the site. They're not easily sourced. The species is Neoborreria spinosa. And their common name, I mean, they have lots of common names probably, but the more generally accepted one is the arid lands katydid. And they will sit on your hand and take up most of your hand, including your fingers. And they have spiky legs, these raptorial forelegs, kind of like a mantis. And they will pounce on their prey and scoop it up and just eat it alive. They're brutal. It's awesome to watch. I love it.
Wow. So, that's pretty cool, Kevin. I'm a little confused myself with all these scientific names. Yeah. So, that's pretty cool. Thank you so much for calling in tonight.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the show. All right, so what happens to be your favorite bug? I know I'm probably sure you're gonna.
I knew you were gonna ask me that question, and I have a prepared answer for you because I get that question a lot.
Oh, great!
My my favorite bug is the next insect that I see.
The next insect that I see
that I've never seen before. You know, for me, it's about diversity. It's about novelty. It's about having this novel experience of seeing something, or if it's a food, tasting something, you know, something that I've never experienced before. And, you know, I was just out in my backyard. I blacklight in my backyard this time of year, actually most times of the year, to be honest, but not too much flies in the cold months, but I had a mayfly in, you know, fishermen are probably more familiar with them than most people, but it's an insect called a mayfly, a species that I've never seen before, fly up to the backside of my house a couple days ago. And, you know, I mean, I've lived at this particular location for 4 years, and I see new stuff all the time, you know, and I'm looking all the time, and it's just so interesting for me. You know, I always say, if you're a bug guy, never a dull moment. I'm never bored if I'm outside.
Of course,
So you know, okay. So now I'm going to answer your question the way you want me to. Okay.
Okay.
I would say out of the bugs that I have in my house, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, I have a lot of pet bugs, but because of the volume of material that's coming in and out of here on a regular basis, you know, it's really ideal for me. I get to see new stuff all the time, but none of it's really necessarily my pet. But if I have to pick a species that's my favorite right now, I've got to give it to the rhino roach. I don't know if you've heard of those
roach.
Or not. Yeah,
definitely
they're the largest cockroach species in the world by weight, and
wow.
they're very expensive, and they can live 10 years, maybe even more. I've had some for 6 years now, and they're getting to the point now where they're just about to reproduce, and I'm really excited about that.
Wow, that's,
so if
that's
I had to
cool.
pick a favorite here right now, yeah, I mean, I put a lot of time into them, you know, so I mean, you could say that they've been my pets for 6 years, but you know, the goal, obviously, you know, because I'm a dealer, is to reproduce them and then offer them to the hobby, who's always asking.
Definitely.
So
I know
they're definitely a contender for a favorite.
Okay. So, you brought up a pet for a long time, and, when I was doing a little bit more research on you, like I do with most of my special guests, I found that you, well, maybe I think it's your daughter, has owned a leopard gecko for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
we've had a variety of...
pretty impressive.
Yeah, we've... Is that a long time for a leopard gecko? I don't even really know.
Well, I mean, for most people, it is. Most people, I mean, I know they can live... longer than that, but for most people, 10 mm-hmm. years with the leopard gecko is a very long time. So you don't meet a lot of people that have owned a leopard gecko for 10 years. Let's put it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had a range of reptiles here at the house. We've had chameleons. We have one bearded dragon now. 2 weeks ago, we had two bearded dragons. Our 9-year-old male passed away, recently.
Oh, sorry.
It was my wife's baby. She's still a little bit of a mess over its passing.
Okay.
You know, I don't personally have a lot of emotional connections to my bugs. There are times though where, you know, I get sad for different reasons. You know, one that comes to mind is, I had a Theraphosa blondi tarantula. It's been about 4 years, but when I think about it, it still really bothers me because it was getting really big and it mismolted. And you know, it doesn't matter how much effort you put in to things or how closely you're watching them. Sometimes, you know, things happen and, you know, yeah, that one still bothers me, but we've kept quite a few different reptiles over the years. Yeah, we enjoy them too. There's always bugs around to feed them, right?
Yeah, definitely. I was just about to say that. But you brought up a term that I'm not familiar with myself, so this is going to be a learning experience for me. But you said mismolted.
Yes.
I don't know if it happens too much in the reptile hobbies. Maybe not. You know, if I want to use an example, you know, praying mantises. If there's any type of pet bug that is commonly kept, where the keepers in that group of bugs are familiar with the term miss molt, it's mantises. If mantises don't have the right humidity level in their tank, they can get stuck in their skin when they're coming out of it. You know, a lot of reptiles, like our bearded dragons, they'll peel, you know, sort of in portions, you know, maybe all at the same time or in parts sort of, and, you know, it just kind of falls off. With mantises, they actually hang usually upside down or at an angle on an incline. And with the aid of gravity, they kind of extract themselves from their old skin. And that's, like reptiles, how they grow.
Of course.
Actually, I don't know. Is that how reptiles grow? I'm not even sure.
They have skeletons too. Yeah. So, instead of like how bugs have it, where the exoskeleton, the reptile's skeleton is inside its body, just like a human would, so they would shed. So sometimes reptiles do get stuck shed, especially it tends to happen on their feet. So a lot of people would soak the feet in like warm water and help them shed a little bit. So it's not like a life-threatening, but of course, if you let it continue and build up, it can definitely have some health issues. But I'm pretty sure it doesn't, it can't kill them if it happens once. Like I'm guessing a miss shed could.
Yeah. With a mantis, it can be the end. Sometimes they'll lose just a leg, or one of the legs will get stuck and it'll be a little disfigured. But one of the nice things about insect pets is that they will regenerate that missing limb in the following molt, or sometimes it takes two molts depending on how close to the last molt it actually happened.
Okay. So we have another caller. You're calling us from an anonymous number. So we're going to take a little chance with you right here. So very sketchy. So good evening.
Hello?
What's your name and where you're calling from?
Well, my name is James P. Madonna. I'm from northeastern New Jersey, and I'm calling you from Google Hangouts to make life easy on myself.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Understand.
Yeah, I know. Peter Clausen, and you got to love technology. I just want to say that I'm in Bergen County, so I'm probably not too far from you guys.
We're in New York City, so shouldn't be too far.
Oh, yeah. 20 minutes west of you. So I want to say to everyone, before you acquire any exotic pet, please do sufficient amount of research. Don't depend on so-called gurus on all these forums. Please get advice from reputable people who know, like Mr. Pete Clausen and yourselves. And because through trial and error, unfortunately, many people will lose their exotic pets. I'm not going to mention any names, but I lost a beloved blue tongue skink because it wasn't listed as wild caught, and it was infested with internal parasites, and my veterinary bills went through the roof. The organization's response was, "Oh, really? That's the only thing they said to me." So, based on that, please do your research. And I have a question for you gentlemen, being that Pete Clausen is on. I'm going to stick to
Hi, James.
How you doing, Pete?
You haven't heard my voice before, but I've listened to your YouTube channel and all that. And I've seen your videos, so I'm very familiar with yours. Good to hear you.
Yeah, I know. I recognize your voice from your videos on YouTube with that great 1920s blues and jazz music that you have on your videos. I remember
I guess so. I forgot. I don't make as many YouTube videos as I used to. I have over 100 YouTube videos of pet bugs up, but I haven't been doing it as much. Instagram is just so much easier anymore than uploading to YouTube for me.
Yeah. I mean, I love his music, gentlemen. It reminds me of the old Little Rascals, you know. Getting back to our crispy, crunchy critters. I want to ask you a question, guys. What do you know about flat rock scorpions? I've tried so many times, and they all died on me mysteriously.
I know nothing about bugs. I'm not a bug person, so that would be Peter. Yeah, so I'm interested in that too.
Right. Speaking of reptiles, I'm glad I just remembered this. A friend of mine in northern Florida, her son actually found an abandoned young juvenile panther chameleon on the side of the highway. And, what an expensive thing to abandon, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it was
abandoned and not, you know, living out there, reproducing.
Yeah, well, you know, in Florida, it's very possible. They found red bellies.
I've seen them in Hawaii.
Everglades.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, the island of Maui is loaded with Jackson's chameleons. I know.
Oh yeah, that's what I saw in Maui. Right.
Well, there are a lot of huge breeding facilities in Florida. There are a couple of businesses that have their breeding facilities in Florida. So definitely, it can be a possibility that it escaped from one of the breeding facilities. And since Florida does have that warm climate, that it's thriving out there. So, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. No problem.
No, the most fascinating part is that she swears up and down that her panther chameleon laps water from a bowl. It doesn't require moving water or droplets.
And really?
I said, yeah. Yeah, the internet says it has to be droplets or moving water.
Yeah. I would definitely like to see a video of that. But, I haven't had a panther chameleon, so I'm not entirely sure about panther chameleons. But, actually, recently we had with Bill Strand on, so he's all about chameleons. So, but when I had my Villa chameleon, they would only drink from moving water. So they actually sell chameleon waterfalls. So that's interesting to hear that a chameleon drinking from standing water.
I told her, I said, I assume you would have like an air stone or something in that large bowl of water to, you know, to encourage
of course.
Drink. I mean, she's from northern Florida, as I like to say, D-U-H. And maybe she's not giving me accurate information. I'm going to have to get on her back and smack her around a little bit for the truth. But,
you're a former wrestler, aren't you?
Yeah, I used to work for pro wrestling for over 10 years. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, I'm trying to breed crested geckos, gentlemen, and the eggs are duds. The eggs rot. They don't hatch. I have no idea
crested
why.
Geckos.
Because they're, you like them?
Yeah, well, I have a crested gecko myself, Rhacodactylus species. So, North New Jersey. So, are you incubating the eggs, or how are you going about trying to get that hatching?
I put them in the damp vermiculite, and I didn't move them. I kept them still. I didn't mess with them. And, you know, they would rot, and I just gave up on it. The female is a harlequin, and the male is a Dalmatian.
Okay.
And I was told that crested gecko clutches are only 2 eggs per clutch. And, they also, you would not get one of each. Like, in other words, if one hatches as a harlequin, the other one will be a harlequin. You won't get one of each.
Okay.
Personally,
I haven't bred crested geckos personally. So what I would recommend doing, I have friends that do breed crested geckos, and they do have success with out of the incubator incubating crested geckos. So, crested gecko eggs. So I know northern New Jersey, they well, at least on the East Coast, the temperature fluctuates a lot. So
yes.
I'm not sure, like, your temperature inside your house, but that can also be a factor in it, as well as the calcium intake from your female. So definitely want to make sure that you're gut loading. If you are feeding insects, but putting some calcium in your Pangea, or I'm not sure if you're using Repashi or Pangea. I should ask, what are you using, Pangea or Repashi? Or
yes,
something
yeah,
else? I know.
Repashi or Pangea. It smells so great, I feel like eating it myself, to be honest with you. I give it Fluker Farms pellets, which Fluker Farms insists that crested geckos will eat it, but I've never seen them eat it, ever.
Yeah, I tend to stay away from those pelleted diets for all of my reptiles that I have. I just can't see myself giving a reptile that's normally just not non-domesticated animal pellets. So I definitely stray away from that, and I never really seen a big turn from giving them pellets or not. So I will actually, what I want you to do for me is I'm going to have you stay on the line, and I'm going to refer you over to a good buddy of mine that can definitely help you out with getting your crested geckos breeding and up and breeding. So you can. So just stay on the line for me. Once you're done asking your questions, I'm going to put you on hold. And after the show, I'll definitely get in contact with you, and then I'll give you all that number so you can
return back to Mr. Clausen, because Mr. Clausen and I are both craft beer enthusiasts also, besides the
that's right.
We love that. So I got these five huge groups on Facebook and various topics. I do mostly political shows with mine, and but anyway, I don't want to bore your viewers with politics, so let Pete take over. Go ahead, Pete.
James, it's always great to listen to you. I always like hearing you talk. You're a talker, and I love your New Jersey accent. I've spent probably two hours in a row listening to some of his shows. It's it's always entertaining. He's got a lot to say. As far as the flat rock scorpions, it's not a species that I sell regularly. I would be surprised if I have sold a total of 10 of them in the history of my shop. I don't deal in exotic scorpions very much. I happen to have one up on the site right now, but that's fairly unusual. Most of my experience is with U.S. species, and most of those wild caught. I have had pet flat rock scorpions in the past. I never found them to be too difficult. I was able to keep them alive for years. Like other scorpions, they're generally happy to feed, and then they can go a long time without feeding. Not in the sense of neglecting the animal, but you offer crickets to it, and it just might not eat for a couple months. I never played around too much with, adding or taking away heat for them. I just had a normal, composite sort of substrate in the bottom, a mixture of things, nothing too fancy, a couple flat rocks for them to hide under, and just fed them on a regular basis. They're huge scorpions, big giant claws, tiny tails, non-aggressive. One of the few scorpions that, I felt comfortable and holding and handing off to my children when they were younger. So I never really had problems with them. I don't know how many of them you've kept, but sounds like you've kept a couple, and you've had bad experiences each time. I don't really know what went wrong. It's really difficult to diagnose a cause of death in a pet bug that is sort of universally kept and, usually does pretty well in captivity.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm still on.
Yeah, you are.
No, you're still on, James.
Oh, I am. Oh, it could be heat, Pete. I'm not trying to rhyme. It could be the fact that I had that ceramic heat lamp underneath the shelving that it was on one side, and it maybe it died from dehydration or just maybe that tarantula expert was correct. Maybe if you're comfortable as a human with your room temperature, then your arachnids will be comfortable. Maybe it was a dehydration issue.
Yeah, nine times out of 10, I'm not a fan of heat pads under pet bug tanks. You know, they seem to cause more problems for people. You know, if they're used correctly, if you've got a really deep substrate, and the heat pad's the right size and the right temperature, you know, it depends on the temperature of your room too, how big the cage is, if the animal can get away from it. You know, there's just a lot of variables, and I always want to be really careful, you know, when I'm giving people advice about how to set a tank up correctly, because no two tanks are alike, really. I mean,
yeah.
if you looked at my bug room, you would see a lot of differences in all the tanks, because, you know, I get some from garage sales over the years. Some people just give me, I buy some, I'm hitting up the Walmart. James and I are both fans of getting as much as we can from the dollar store and, you know, saving money on things. Pet bugs don't need ExoTerra tanks for the most part. You know, they're happy with, you know, just whatever, really.
I mean, to be honest with you guys, I've gotten a lot of enclosures made by the Sterilite company from Walmart, you know, the clear ones. And,
me too.
But very expensive.
Yeah. Well, I use this soldering iron, 40-watt soldering iron, to burn holes, an appropriate amount of holes, without going overboard. So, you know, they have some humidity. And I think when I'm thinking about it, that person with the tarantula website might be right, that a decent, reasonable room temperature should be adequate for arachnids. I mean, our my room temperature is like anywhere from about 70 to, I would say within the 70s, the lower to upper 70s on average.
And that's pretty perfect for most pet bugs.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
There's a reason why all of the pet bugs that are in the hobby are in the hobby. And generally it's because they do really well in captivity. The ones that don't fare well in captivity tend to not be reproduced. And so, you know, they might be around for a year or so, but then they disappear pretty much forever because nobody wants to get them again, because, you know, there was some aspect of their care that caused them to be difficult, and then they weren't, you know, mass produced by a bunch of breeders out there.
I'm very happy with the desert hairy scorpion that I got from Pete Clausen. And I'm also, I didn't get this other scorpion from Pete, but I'm very happy with this Asian forest scorpion that I have. And, the desert hairy is fantastic for people who want an arachnid.
Yeah. It's our largest U.S. species. It's hard not to love them.
Yeah, they have a long lifespan in captivity. I hear they can go as long as 20 years if they're kept in a lap of luxury, you know, in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're so prehistoric looking, you know, like so many of the lizards out there in the reptile hobby, you know, like dinosaurs, but they precede even dinosaurs. I think they were the first animal to actually come up on the land, scorpions were.
If mine turns out to be a big, I'm going to name it Deborah Harry.
Right.
But,
that's a great name.
Oh, I'm very happy with people starting to breed emperor scorpions now in the United States since they're banned, you know, the importation of them.
Yeah. Someone just emailed me the other day and told me that they were doing real well with that. And they were talking about selling some to me. And I just encouraged them to go on the forums and sell them there directly, because they're going to make a lot more money than trying to wholesale them out to somebody. And, you know, they're so desirable.
Definitely. I don't mean to cut you guys short, but we only have 5 minutes and 30 seconds left of tonight's broadcast. And our system shuts out everybody after 5 minutes, even though we can continue recording. So I must give my farewell tonight. But if you don't mind, I'm going to put both of you guys in our green room so you guys can continue your conversation, and I will be back with you guys shortly.
There's going to be food in the green room?
Of course, man, of course.
Okay, I'll make believe I'm eating a ribeye steak right now with Pete.
Oh, my favorite. My favorite. Peter Luger's my favorite.
Yes, yeah, good stuff.
All right, that does it tonight for Empire State Reptiles Live. I thank you guys so much for tuning in. On this Earth Day, I want to shine light on this past week. This week for me has been very difficult for me to turn on the TV and see some of the violent acts that have been taking place over the world and in our countries, and of course in our communities. On Sunday, not an interesting thing happened, but a very disgusting and sad thing happened. A man's death was broadcasted on the largest social media platform in the world. And I'm bringing this up because that death hits close to home with one of my good friends, a family member. So I'm definitely calling for peace. And I'm tired of turning on my phone and seeing all these CNN breaking news of violence here, terrorist attack here, and it's just getting to be too much. So there needs to be something that needs to be done. And with me, I know there's not much I can do, but I want to call for that, especially in the reptile community, just unite. Today is Earth Day, so today should be a special day to honor the Earth as well as the people that inhabit this Earth, as well as the animals that inhabit this Earth. So please, if you can't go outside and be your neighborhood watchman, call your neighbor. Tell them, hey, come over. Let's watch the game. Or help in your local soup kitchen or your community center. Every little bit of volunteering and every little bit of that courteous actions count. And trust me, they will not go unnoticed by certain people. Once again, I thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And I just hope to see all you guys back here. Of course, I did not plan to have the show end like this. I wasn't planning this little monologue, but I felt the need to share this with you. Once again, good night and happy Earth Day to all.
There's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. Much brighter than tomorrow. And if you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry. In a place where there's no hurt or sorrow, there are ways to get there. If you care enough for the living, make a little space, make a better place. Heal the world, a better place.
Thank you.
Buffalo.
Spirits never die in my heart until you are all my brothers.
Hello.
That kind of music.
Hello.